Hi, can I please have your attention? Thanks. Hi, everyone, and please do not let us stop you from eating. Enjoy and relax. I am Joanne Hovis, and with my colleagues Tony Perez and Ken Feldman, we're all members of the Natoa Board of Directors, and we are incredibly proud today to be able to announce and recognize the 2011 Community Broadband Awardees. I should note, thanks to SFGovTV, who we want to thank enormously on behalf of Natoa, we are streaming live today, so everybody out there on the web, welcome, and we're very glad to have you here with us. I get a little bit lost behind a podium, even in heels, so I'm going to stand here. The Natoa Board created the Community Broadband Awards a number of years ago to try to remedy a great gap, which is that there is insufficient recognition and gratitude extended to the people and organizations and projects and communities and jurisdictions among us that work so incredibly hard and really move the needle on community broadband and make possible new kinds of projects, new kinds of efforts, and new models. And these annual awards are our way of pointing to some of the most extraordinary efforts and some of the great leaders out there in the public sector, among nonprofits, and in the private sector who are really changing America through community broadband. So I'm going to start by recognizing the honorable mentions of this year's Community Broadband Awards, and asking those who received honorable mention to please see me after we're done with lunch today. We have certificates for you, and we're very grateful that you're here. Honorable mention in the category of Community Broadband Visionary of the Year, Chris Mitchell of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, for his extensive and creative work to document and advocate for the efforts of localities across the country in broadband. Also in the category, honorable mention for Community Broadband Visionary of the Year, Mary Beth Henry of the City of Portland, Oregon, for creating and leading a citywide broadband strategic planning process that brought together all parts of a diverse community to determine the broadband future in Portland, a process that offers a model to communities nationwide. In the category of Community Broadband Wireless Network of the Year, Chemung County and the City of Elmira, New York, for building a 4G wireless broadband initiative on a multi-jurisdictional basis that will serve government and public safety agencies through a large rural suburban area of New York State.
In the category of Community Broadband Organization of the Year Award, the honorable mention goes to Clackamas County, Oregon. For more than a decade of effort to bring fiber to the rural parts of this hybrid rural-urban area, and for realizing that goal through a competitively awarded BTOP grant that will extend over 180 miles of fiber to the most remote areas of the county, enabling both community anchors and the private sector to address their unmet needs. Is there someone here from Clackamas?
Sorry, it's a little bit clear. We're done. Moving on to the awards, our Community Broadband Visionary of the Year for 2011 is Councilmember Bruce Harrell of Seattle for devising the Great Student Initiative, a partnership between the city and the private sector to provide low-cost, high-speed internet access, hardware and software for low-income students in the Seattle Public School District. Councilman Harrell, if I can invite you to come up and give us a few words. And I should mention, by the way, that the Community Broadband Awards are glass. As you can see from the example here, they're extraordinarily heavy and at the same time fragile. So we will mail the awards to the awardees.
In the mail.
Thank you very much, Joanne, and thank you for Natoa for this. Really an honor. There's a few folks in the audience that I want to give particular thanks to. Those are members of our City of Seattle Department of Information Technology. Here we have Bill Schreier, our director, Tony Perez, who's of course on the board, Alice Lawson and Brenda Tate. I want to give a special recognition to them. It's a beautiful space where technology intersects with social justice, education, and jobs. This was the intersection that sort of drove me to start thinking about the Great Student Initiative. I want to thank Comcast and actually BroadStripe, which will be Wave, and CenturyLink and other carriers for listening attentively to the social justice and the undereducation issues, particularly in Seattle, but of course across this country. I just want to share with you a few statistics about Seattle and why it's so important to Seattle. Seattle is known as one of the most wired cities in this country. We did a survey and found that 84% of our households with incomes above $50,000 receive high-speed internet access, 84%, but only 46% of households with incomes under $30,000 received high-speed internet access. 93% of our respondents with college degrees had internet access, but only 40% of those without college degrees had. 80% of Caucasians had high-speed internet access, but only 38% of Hispanic Latinos had high-speed internet access. Again, we look at the disparities and we look at the role, as you well know, that technology and access will play in our country for our young people. And this is the work that I know all of you are very passionate about. So again, I want to thank you for the award. Here in Seattle, I'll keep battling the fight for you. Thanks for all your policy advocacy and all the hard work you do. Once again, on behalf of the City of Seattle, thank you very much.
I get the privilege of announcing the Community Broadband Fiber of the Year Award. And this one goes to the One Maryland Intercounty Broadband Network, a fiber middle mile network owned by 10 local governments in the state of Maryland that came together as a regional consortium to build public fiber that would be locally owned but regionally interconnected to maximize the benefits of the fiber capacity both for public sector use, such as public safety, and for private sector use to reach underserved areas that were previously too costly to access with last mile services. Accepting the award are Lori Sherwood of Howard County, also Ira Levy of Howard County, and Sherry, Lori and Ira, you might want to invite others to the podium, because I know that this is a consortium and a lot of other people have played instrumental roles in making this happen. So, Mitzi, I'm really glad you're coming up, too.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Natoa, for having the awards and recognizing us. There's a few partners I really wanted to mention while we're up here, because it really wasn't possible without them. Obviously, every jurisdiction in Central Maryland that participated made this possible. It defined our story. It defined the things that we wanted to do and how we wanted to work together. Obviously, as part of that, there were universities, public safety groups, libraries, K through 12, colleges, and all kinds of private partners that also really supported us through the entire effort. Most of all, Lori Sherwood, who's standing next to me, was without a doubt worked night and day on this and made really it all come together, made it possible. To us, I think this entire network is about the services and applications that will be on it one day as it grows. You know, obviously, we We don't mind building it, but what we really do is look forward to the services and the benefits that the community will get when this is up and running as it evolves year after year. So on behalf of ICBN, I really want to thank you all.
Thank you. I do want to thank, actually, publicly, Ira and Lori. Many people don't know, we applied twice. The first round, we did 2,000 hours of due diligence after we filed the application. And in the second round, we did another 2,000-plus hours, really just pulling together 10 jurisdictions and trying to get all of that stuff was very difficult. And lastly, I just want to thank, sincerely, our governor, Martin O'Malley, our Senator Barbara Mikulski, as well as Senator Cardin, and all of our congressional delegation who signed on in support, but particularly it was the work of Governor O'Malley and Senator Mikulski in the end that helped us get people at the federal government to say, well, you know, I live in Maryland and I have internet. Why do you need more internet in Maryland? So that's all, but I really do want to thank, it was really support of our elected officials and the hard work of Ira and Lori that got us there. And I would be remiss if I did not shout out and say, because she won't say it herself, but Joanne Hovis and the wonderful people at CTC, particularly Matt DeHaven, we could not have done it without them, and as well as our contractors at Skyline. They were very supportive in the process, and we thank them all.
In the category of Community Broadband Wireless Network of the Year for 2011, we are proud to give the award to the City of Asheville, North Carolina for deploying a wireless wide area network to replace the iNet that was once provided at affordable cost but has become unacceptably costly as the result of state legislation benefiting the incumbent provider. The city chose to build its own infrastructure to meet its public safety and public service needs and accomplish this goal in record time with no loss of service to users. And accepting the award on behalf of the City of Asheville is CTOA board member Shelley McCullough.
We are so proud of the City of Asheville for rising to the occasion in a situation that was not of their doing, but it was their problem. And they got it fixed, and they got it fixed in record time. It was a do-it-yourself public safety network. Unfortunately, the legislation that affected Asheville so negatively has also affected every municipality in the state who would like to incentivize or subsidize the private sector partnership. So I also want to take this opportunity to say something about CTOA, who valiantly fought the effort. This year we lost, but we won it for the last 3 years, and also to thank Mignon Clyburn, whose letter of support really established credibility for what we were doing and raised awareness. Thank you.
Next, the Community Broadband Organization of the Year Award goes to the Greater Austin Area Telecommunications Network, a 15-year partnership among the City of Austin, Texas, Austin Independent School District, Travis County, Austin Community College, the University of Texas, State of Texas, and Lower Colorado River Authority, in which 350 route miles of fiber connect 496 sites in the Austin area. This network serves as a foundation for public communications in the area and is renowned for being among the first networks to deliver 10 gig connectivity to key community anchor sites, including healthcare, public safety, telemedicine, education, library services, and government efficiency. GAATN, as their acronym, Greater Austin Area Telecommunications Network, in case you forgot, is the latest partnership of its kind in Texas. Accepting the award for the organization is Dr. Wayne Wiedemeyer.
Thank you, Natoa. This is a great honor for our organization. In 1992, we started with these seven public sector entities, and we said, we don't know where the future is going to take us, but it's taken us to new thresholds in being able to deliver to our constituents in the public sector and to our users all across the Central Texas area, all kinds of digital content, from educational content to healthcare content to governmental access. But the major thing is not so much the technology, which people hold up as a great tool. This organization of those seven governmental entities has continued to thrive and expand. We've built more and more fiber to reach out to more and more of our sites over the years, and we do this in a partnership that relies on the expertise that comes from all seven of those governmental entities, not just the contractors that we hire to do the work for us, but we use those seven governmental entities, and we have been able to create a network that has a governing organization that's able to modify itself to continue to meet the needs in the public sector in the Central Texas area, to where now we're reaching out to counties outside of Travis County in Central Texas to help those counties implement connectivity to the Gatton network, as we call it in Central Texas, so that we can provide that benefit to all of those sites that are outside of Texas. This is an award that is very... We're very proud to receive this award for all seven of those entities, the city, the county, the state, the school district, the community college, the state university, and the Lower Colorado River Authority have worked very hard over the last 15 years to make this network what it is today. And I want to thank NATOA for this award in the name of all of the participants of Gatton. Thank you very much.
And I want to be sure that we recognize as well our very own Rondella Hawkins from the city of Austin. Thank you, Dr. Wiedemeyer. You've probably all seen the announcements already of the award and know that the 2011 Community Broadband Project of the Year has been awarded for the combined efforts of the two Kansas cities, Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas, with Google. And I'm going to deviate from my script here to tell you all that when we first notified the awardees, we got a lovely response back saying, guys, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. But we haven't built the network yet. Aren't you getting ahead of yourselves a bit? And we responded, we know you haven't built the network yet, and we're looking forward to seeing what it looks like, but you have accomplished some really incredible things that are in some ways just as consequential as building the network. You have completely changed the national conversation about broadband, about gigabit speeds, about open access, and very importantly in this community, you are demonstrating how local governments working together with the private sector in a collaborative way, where the private sector collaborates and works with us rather than seeing us as adversaries, that kind of dynamic can really make a very big difference and facilitate broadband development. So we thank both Kansas City's and Google for providing that model. And let me now invite Mayor Joe Reardon of Kansas City, Kansas, to accept the award on behalf of the three organizations.
Thank you, Joanne. Thank you very much, Tony. Well, I get to do the heavy lifting for all three organizations, I guess, at lunch here today. But I really want to thank NATOA for this award, and it's really my honor to be the recipient on behalf of Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri. It was absolutely a team effort that brought us to this place today, and Dennis Hayes, our county administrator, is here with us, and I do want to acknowledge him because it was the coming together of both our administrative function, our elected officials, and so many community partners that really allowed us to put our case forward like so many other cities had done, and I'm appreciative of that team effort. We share your passion for the need for ultra-high-speed infrastructure and its ability to move cities and their citizens forward in dynamic ways. And I'll just say I'm very hopeful that the public-private partnership that we've formed with Google can be one that's a model that you all will see kind of come to fruition in a way that perhaps will help other cities take next steps forward in this kind of widespread deployment. So it's our honor to be with you here today and to receive this award, and I just really want to thank NATOA a lot. Thank you all very much.
Finally, I'm really happy that I get to present this award. Local communities understand the enormous transformative power that broadband networks have and how we can use broadband technology to create community, to improve education, healthcare, public safety, and a host of other things, and it really changed the way we live, work, and play. For that reason, local communities have found that it's vitally important that we assess our own broadband and communications needs, and to the extent that those cannot be provided by the current players in the market, that we should be able to chart our own direction and address the specific needs of our communities that could be addressed by our broadband technology. Typically, we give only one community broadband hero of the year, but this year we're actually going to give two. And the reason for that is because there was a tremendous effort on the part of both at the local level to fight for the rights of local communities to determine their own broadband future. And that at the same time, when help and advocacy was most needed, we had the support, backing, and encouragement of the FCC to help move things along, and we're so appreciative. So this year, the Community Broadband Heroes of the Year Award go to FCC Commissioner Mignon Clyburn and Catherine Rice for their heroic efforts to stand up to the rights of North Carolina localities to determine their broadband and economic futures. Accepting the awards are Commissioner Clyburn and Catherine Rice. Please step up to the podium.
Well, in Southern parlance, it's very odd to get an award for getting your butt beat. but as Mignon Clyburn said earlier, now is the time to heal. And the beauty of healing when you get a cut is that there's new growth. And we have learned in North Carolina, and we have new growth, and we're coming back at this soon. So thank you very much on behalf of North Carolina. And, well, Mignon, make us proud.
Thank you. The commissioner's going to give our keynote at lunch today, so I don't want to pressure her to speak both times. I'm going to hand it over to Ken.
All right. Commissioner, I could have had you just stay up here, but this way you'll get to burn a few more calories. So it is my honor and privilege at this time to give you a little bit of background on our keynote speaker, Commissioner Mignon Clyburn. She was sworn into her position as a commissioner at the FCC on August 3rd, 2009, and her term runs through June 30th of 2012. She has a long history of public service and a real dedication to meeting the needs of her constituents and the general public interest. Before her service at the federal level, she served for 11 years as a representative from South Carolina's 6th District on the State Public Service Commission. In that capacity, her first term was in July of 1998, and she was reelected in 2002 and 2006 and served as chair from 2002 through 2004. She has been active in a whole host of public interest activities. Before serving at the PSC in South Carolina, she spent 14 years as publisher and general manager of the Coastal Times, a Charleston-based weekly newspaper focusing primarily on issues affecting the African-American community. She, this list is so long of all the different things she has served. I'm just going to give you a couple. South Carolina State Energy Advisory Council, Trident Technical College Foundation, South Carolina Cancer Center Board, Columbia College Board of Visitors, Palmetto Project Board, and there's a whole bunch more, but we would much rather hear her speak. Let me tell you, as the president of NATOA and someone who gets to interact with the commission on a regular basis, we have a seat at the table in her office. We do not agree on every issue, nor should we, but among the five commissioners serving us now, we have received tremendous support and an open door on every single issue. And Commissioner, I want to publicly thank you and Angie. When this NOI was being developed that we're also involved in right now on rights of way and wireless facility siting, to the extent that it was ethically okay to do so, Angie worked with us and listened to us and tried to make sure that the questions that were asked in that proceeding fairly reflected the issues and fairly reflected local government concerns. And again, we didn't love everything about that NOI, but thanks to you, to both of you, it was something that we could deal with in a much more, we think, responsible manner. So I can't think of just a better friend to have at the commission than Commissioner Mignon Clyburn.
Thank you so much. You're extremely kind. Thank you so much. Thank you. That might be premature. You haven't heard my speech, so. Thank you, Ken, so much, and NATOA, for this incredible honor. You might, if you keep up with the commission, you might know by our schedule that we have a meeting tomorrow. So literally, I'm going to eat a vegetarian plate, which is, you can probably tell by where I am from and how I look that's not normal for me. And we're going to literally make a mad dash after that to the airport so that we will meet our statutory obligations, to be present at our mandatory meeting on tomorrow. But I told someone jokingly, even before I realized what an honor you were going to bestow upon me, I said yes. If you noted, they'll confirm, Ken, those will confirm that I said yes, because when it wasn't fashionable to be supportive, you were there. When the heat was on in all sectors, you were there. We believe in the same things fundamentally. We might not agree on everything, but we believe in the same things. So I had no idea when I made this statement what an impact and what a ripple it would send through the ecosystem until I started reading some of the blogs. It was, incidentally, I don't recommend doing if you're in public service. it's a little distracting. It hurts a lot. But I read a couple of things and they said, she needs, basically stay in her lane. Who does she think she is?
you know, a federal commissioner getting involved in state business. And being from South Carolina, I'm kind of used to that, you know. I'm used to saying that, actually. I thought it was so important to be supportive of my neighbors in the Carolina who were fighting for their rights to receive and promote high-speed internet, and it never occurred to me not to, because for me, it was simply the right thing to do. I wasn't the only voice speaking up on behalf of cities and towns, having them the flexibility to deploy high-speed internet when their needs weren't being met. For a year earlier, if you remember, the National Broadband Plan made the same recommendations. Where there are citizens who need access to broadband and aren't getting it, those communities that have accepted the responsibilities to address their citizens' everyday needs should naturally have the flexibility and ability to deliver those essential services themselves. This desire and sense of purpose shouldn't surprise anyone. Generations ago, many rural communities had to accept the self-help concept in order to obtain the most basic of utility services, water, electric, and telephone connections. So all of this seems perfectly logical to me. Unfortunately, logic from our perspective didn't prevail in a certain state, but so I trust you'll forgive me, like Catherine said, that I was surprised and a little embarrassed to get that acknowledgement because, usually you get an award after a successful outcome. You know that successful outcome like the FCC's multi-year quest to complete universal service and internet carrier compensation reform. You know that one, right? But seriously, I'm really honored to be here and to be aligned with your leadership on this particular issue. Catherine and your supporters and friends throughout this organization who spoke out, Ken Feldman, Steve Treyer, Joanne Hovis, and Jim Ballin, all of you committed individuals who work hard to benefit the citizens of our communities, we owe all of you a debt of gratitude for your commitment and dedication to the promotion of broadband deployment and service for the betterment of our nation. So I don't have to convince anyone here how broadband has the potential to change lives and communities. It is no longer just a luxury service. It is an essential service. A few months ago, I listened to a citizen in Nebraska who had moved from one suburb of Omaha to another, but didn't realize until after her move that broadband wasn't available literally on her side of the street. This revelation wasn't simply a disappointment to her, it was a disruption to her life. She could no longer seamlessly access her financial information online or use email to communicate or conduct business from her home. Last week, during my meeting with organizations representing schools, libraries, and health clinics, it was stressed to me that faster broadband is needed by community anchor institutions that are serving numerous citizens simultaneously. Whether it's from constituents who currently cannot access broadband from their home or anchor institutions that need faster service, it seems everyone wants access, yet everyone cannot get it. In fact, the Commission's recent broadband progress report noted that up to 26 million Americans don't have access to broadband service. And I, like you, believe that this number is too great, and that the needs of these Americans need to be addressed right now. That report focused on fixed broadband, what consumers can obtain from cable and phone companies. And on the wireless side, hundreds of millions are using mobile telephone service, and we see a trend where more consumers are adopting smartphones and are primarily accessing the internet over those wireless devices. This holds especially true for minorities who more often access the internet via mobile wireless device at a much higher rate than white Americans. Because of these trends, I think it is extremely important that our policies promote the availability of both fixed and wireless services. residential and enterprise consumers each expected. And by providing the foundation for robust communications networks, both wired and wireless, in every community, we can encourage economic development, job creation, investment, and innovation. Each of us has a role to play in this goal. At the Commission, we are working hard to reform our policies in response to the vast technological changes that have occurred over the past decade. For example, we currently are in the midst of considering universal service reform, a fund that has been critical to our nation. We have been able to provide affordable phone service in remote and high-cost areas of this country as a result. In addition, low-income consumers have received discounted phone service, and schools and libraries have been able to obtain discounted phone and internet service. For about a decade now, the Commission has permitted phone companies to invest USF proceeds in networks that can offer both voice and broadband service. And because of this policy, additional private investment made by providers, the technological changes that permitted cable to begin offering broadband service and voice service, as well as the local and state policies that encourage build out by cable companies, hundreds of millions of Americans can now access voice and high-speed internet service. It was the confluence of good policy, technological advancements, and significant investments that have resulted in broadband coverage, the coverage we have today. Yet, a digital divide remains. Tens of millions of Americans still do not have broadband physically available to them, and approximately 100 million Americans have not adopted it. And as good as our policies have been, quite frankly, they need to be better. And we each have the capacity to ensure that broadband is available and affordable to all. The Commission's role in addressing the communications need of our nations has evolved over time. First, the focus was on telephone and radio. Then, as technology advanced, we added television, cable, mobile, wireless, and most recently, broadband. And as you consider your part in the communications space, your roles have changed as well. From rights-of-way management to negotiating and enforcing local franchising agreements, all such fun, right? To approving wireless tower sightings, you all have had to evolve in your service to the public. And of course, that evolution will continue. When I arrived at the FCC just over 2 years ago, our staff was hard at work drafting the National Broadband Plan. This plan had been called on by Congress after prompting from several communications and policy experts, including my good friend Commissioner Michael Copps. They saw the potential for broadband to transform our nation, and they insisted on a national strategy to ensure every citizen could be connected and benefit from it. Since March of last year, this plan has been our guide for considering the policies that need to be modified so that consumers have better access to advanced communication services. It identified many areas that we need to address to better promote broadband affordability and availability. It emphasized the need for each level of government to work in concert to ensure that broadband can be delivered to consumers. I continue to appreciate how each level of government brings their own unique perspectives to these issues. At the state and local levels, you are close to the consumers. You know which areas have the best service, which areas have no service, and which constituents are more likely to be left behind. By working together, however, we can identify the gaps and direct our resources to tackle that digital divide. A lot of our focus and your attention have been on deployment, and I continue to believe that this is an important endeavor for all of us. But it's not enough just to build broadband networks and assume everyone will come. We must view our roles as more expansive than chief promoters of broadband deployment. It is a must that we promote digital literacy, broadband use, and affordability. It is encouraging to meet individuals like you who are committed to educate seniors, the working class with no computer experience, and our young people. librarians, community organizers, and many others are transforming people's lives one by one through computer and online instruction. Here in California, for example, several community organizations have come together in a single goal to train and connect 1 million new internet users this year. They are targeting low-income minority parents who have children in middle school. The parents will be trained to access and navigate specific content on the web that will help them guide their children onto college. Community Union told me that their goal is to encourage sustainable adoption of broadband technology in marginalized communities, and that they are using the resources that are already present in their communities, school computer labs, that are otherwise sitting idle when the dismissal bell rings. They maintain that they are turning the school lab into an empowerment hub, where parents learn skills from turning on a computer and using a mouse to navigating the internet, emailing, and finding the tools to help their children attain high school diploma and go on to college. These goals took enhanced meaning for me, and I know for many of you. For just last week, the Census Bureau reported that the nation's poverty rate increased to 15.1%, the highest since 1993. More than 46 million Americans, almost one in six, were classified as poor last year. Children were hit especially hard. More than one in five qualified as poor last year. And for African Americans and Hispanics, the poverty rate was about 2.5 times greater than it was for non-Hispanic whites. In addition to the basic needs of these Americans, we must do our part to educate and prepare vulnerable communities for this digital age. If we don't, they may be left even further behind. Every child needs an education, and now this includes a digital education, a pathway to gaining skills that will lead to jobs, sustainability, and hopefully prosperity. But the basic truth is that many who are living below the poverty line cannot afford broadband at home. Adoption for low-income households lags significantly at only 40% for families with an annual income of $20,000 as compared to 91% for those with annual incomes above $75,000. For these families, they are at a significant disadvantage. Their children cannot use the internet after hours to complete their homework. As more schools are moving to online communications, the parents are also significantly impacted by this disconnection. It's harder to keep up with the latest information about their children's education, and it is more difficult to keep their children safe from dangerous liaisons online. While our community anchor institutions, such as libraries, are critical for bridging this significant shortfall, many of those institutions are suffering also due to severe budget cuts in our communities. They have shortened their hours, and the demand for computer time is great, so there are extremely long wait times for a computer, and the limits of usually 1 hour, usually 59 minutes to be exact, for patrons to use a terminal is a significant disadvantage, especially if you're trying to fill out a job application. Therefore, as a nation, no matter how critical things may be for us economically, we must address the connectivity needs of low-income families. It is noble and sustainable goal to use these technologies to help lift entire families out of poverty through education and digital connection. And the FCC is joining. We are looking at how we can modify our own policies to further assist the private sector to begin offering significant broadband equipment and service to these families, along with digital training, and I know you're going to speak about that later in the week. And yes, while much has been done, there is still much more to do. The patchwork of opportunities in each of our communities is in critical need of local involvement and your help with coordination. These programs cannot reach their fullest potential if our communities are not aware of them. So it is a must that we all become even more involved than we are today. I believe that the members of NATOA are in a unique position to play an even more critical role in strengthening the communications network by raising the focus on and further promoting the digital literacy and broadband adoption efforts that are currently underway in our communities. And where those needs persist, you are among the best in helping to inform those organizations where the greatest needs are, including those broadband providers that you know really want or really should help make a difference in bridging the digital divide. So for all of you, each of you in this room, all of you broadband heroes, I wish to thank you again for your extraordinary dedication and commitment to public service. While it is not always easy, this is an incredible time to be a public service because in addition to your natural drive and determination to better serve your communities, we now have these incredible technologies with unlimited potential to enhance those efforts and change our neighbors' lives. I remain committed to work with you, to working to advance the policies that will achieve optimal improvements for all consumers, for all communities. By doing that, we are really and truly enhancing the lives of every American. I thank you so much for your support. I thank you so much for your recognition. And I thank you so much for the work we will continue to do together to connect all of our communities. Godspeed.
Okay. We actually have a few minutes for questions, okay. So let's, we'll get you to the airport on time.
Okay. No, I'm not worried about, well, yes, I am. Yeah. I was going to say, I really don't want to take the red eye. Are there any questions or concerns? I know you brought forth the filing. I probably can't speak too much on that, but I am definitely aware and am being briefed on that engagement. On that particular issue? Yes, sir.
Commissioner,
and can you identify yourselves for those who are in virtual?
Sure. I'm David Eisenberg. Commissioner Clyburn, as you are undoubtedly aware, the network neutrality rules that the FCC passed recently are weak in several aspects, and my understanding is that there's still an open docket about reclassifying broadband as a telecommunications service. Could you speak to that issue, please?
I could, but what? Yeah. Yeah. We are definitely on the record, and those of us who have been engaged with our office over the past year, you know where we are with that. You know what positions we took, especially as it relates. I mentioned wireless and wireline, and I don't have to tell any of you the significance of the wireless space, and I mentioned to you the communities and certain expectations. We fought as hard as we could to get what we got. And I don't mean to be flippant, I'm being very sincere. And as you mentioned, that docket is open, and so I'm probably perpetually limited as to what I could say, but I will affirm to you that the word parity has a lot of meaning for me, and you're very smart people in this room, and I will continue to
stick to my commitments.
Good to see you again. I spent a lot. That's the state. I don't understand it. I spend outside of my home state. I seem to go to that state every time I get on the plane. Every other time I get on a plane. Absolutely right.
I want to reference specifically the work that you're trying to promote with digital literacy, highlighted in the Future Media Report, which came out a little bit earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Through our AmeriCorps program, we're really trying to promote the idea of this national core promoting digital literacy.
Cool.
And work with partners across the country to be expanding our AmeriCorps efforts. One of the questions I have for you in terms of the leadership role the Commission has on this issue is the education that could be happening with other U.S. federal departments, the extent to which that they can actually see this as a priority of the FCC now, this is the Department of Education and so forth. Is there a way in which the FCC can be focusing efforts on digital literacy specifically as a priority?
We do understand, and things may not be progressing at the speed in which all of us would like, but there is a continual mutual dialogue between our sister agencies, and especially the more logical ones, health, education, and the like, where these natural, and energy, of course, with Smart Grid, where all of these natural synergies align themselves. All I can commit to you that with each and every day, with the engagements with you, that we will continue to do better. It's usually a time allocation challenge. You are in your lane, so to speak, and I don't mean to be flippant. You're doing what you are accustomed to doing, and sometimes, as much as you know that it makes perfect sense to move in one direction, it's not easy for us to. It's important, and everybody's committed. Please don't get me wrong. It's just not easy to align yourselves in the way in which. But we've got to do it. The president has mandated it. And it is really happening. It's a lot of it is under the radar screen. But you've got a commissioner, and it's not unnatural for me coming from the state commission that I'm used to working in multi-sector. So I'm hopeful that as things go forward that we will see more of that. And please, stay engaged with us and people and things and concepts that you need. Just don't let up. I guess fundamentally is what I'm saying to you. We can do better. We will do better, but it's going to take a pleasant continual nudge from all of you to make sure that we're on course. And that's the commitment I'll make to you today. Yes, ma'am, in the rear.
Hi, I'm Missy Herrera from Montgomery County, Maryland.
And congratulations.
And as last year, about this time, you received the award at the C. Everett Parker Darren at a brunch breakfast.
It was early.
You did mention there have been many women FCC commissioners, but there has never been a woman FCC chair. We hope that someday you will pioneer in that.
Thank you so much. I like you.
Let me ask you, the commission is focused on broadband training. You have talked about community networks.
Yes.
Local governments, we build these things. We provide public safety communications. We fund nonprofits that provide training. We operate the schools and the libraries. So why is it that our ability to charge for the use of public property in rights of ways is constantly under attack at the FCC, our ability to negotiate agreements that provide benefits to the community, that fund all those things the FCC says is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we constantly under attack by the FCC, and what is it that we can do to help change that conversation?
Well, I appreciate you reaffirming that engagement. That is a continual frustration and challenge for you. Again, as I said forth earlier, all we can do is better. And so if we can continue with our engagement, I'm one of now four, so I'm not going to take, I don't have total ownership, but as much with my exchange on a federal-state joint board, it is very, very natural for me to have engagement at the state and local level. And so if there's anything that I could do to help this process along, not making any promises, but I will do what I can to make atmospherically, make the exchange better. I'll commit to you to do so. And there's my affirmation by a sound that we said. So that means I was telling the truth. So. Are there any other questions and concerns? My plane doesn't leave for another couple of minutes. Yes, sir.
Commissioner Gary Letter, following up a little bit on Mitzi's question,
yes.
And your more
it's serious. I was not being flippant about it.
No, your response is great. One of the things that's been missing the last 2 years at the commission is that there used to be something called, and Ken was the chair, the local state government advisory committee. And waiting for that to be repopulated has been a little bit like waiting for Godot. When they announced the extension for us to file comments in the broadband NOI, one of the reasons given was that the new IAC could participate. We're a couple weeks away from those reply comments being due, and we still don't have an IAC named. I was just wondering if the chairman's office has briefed you, or if there's something that you might be able to help us with to sort of shake that loose.
I have to be careful because I have to go back, but I will say that your concerns are my concerns, and in my next series of engagements, I will, and of course it's now memorialized, I will affirm that you brought that up. And I know that you've made submissions. I took some liberties to make some suggestions too for some people who I have been on the federal state level to. So I can tell you that we have made I will get back to you on that. I don't mean to sound inarticulate today, but I just want you to know that that is a concern of our office. We have mentioned it on more than one occasion, and I will reaffirm today Natoa's concern about that FACA. I don't like to say it. It sounds funny when you say it to me, but that committee being repopulated. So trust me, as soon as I get back, I will reaffirm what you said loud and clear. I'll play back this part of the tape. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you again, Commissioner. We really appreciate your being with us, and we look forward to having you with us again sometime soon. Okay, that concludes this session. The general session that follows will also be in this room, so we're going to need everybody to leave so they can clean up and reset up, and we'll be back here at 2:15. Thank you.